Now, here's a thing I never thought I'd say. Our next guest has a story you've heard many times before. In fact, we've covered this subject on quite a few occasions in the past, so it's a bit of a disappointment that we're returning to it again today. But we're happy to welcome Mark Dodgson onto the show because what he has to say is important. It concerns the underrepresentation of women in science and technology. Mark's a professor of innovation studies at the University of Queensland Business School, and he's just recently completed a research article on the topic for the World Economic Forum.
Only 5% of leadership positions in the technology industry are held by women. Two-thirds of technology startups in the USA have no women on the board of directors. The World Economic Forum assesses that at the current rate of change, women will not attain parity in the world of work for another 100 years. These are really scary statistics.
And I understand from looking at some of the research that computer science in the United States, that the number of women actually employed in that area has almost halved since the 1980s. So in some areas, we're going backwards.
I think we are going backwards in a number of areas, and I think it's a big systemic problem. It's a societal problem in many ways, that we're not providing enough incentives for girls to think about taking up technology careers. For example, there was a survey undertaken by PwC in the UK recently of 2,000 young people, and only 3% of girls thought of technology as a first career choice. And an astonishingly, 88% of respondents, that's boys and girls, couldn't name a single female role model in the technology industry. 88%.
This is an equality issue, but it's also an issue of wasted opportunity, isn't it, according to you?
Absolutely. It's an efficiency problem. If you're not using half the world's brains and creativity, then you're wasting a real opportunity. We know that if women are involved in designing products and being involved in decisions about technology, you get better outcomes. The skills that are needed in the technology industry now are very broad and diverse. You need skills in creativity, in collaboration, in relationship building. And women tend to be rather good at that. And by excluding them, we're getting suboptimal answers. We're not getting the products and services that could be made and could be delivered to the world. The classic example of a problem in this area is when they developed the airbags for car safety. They discovered after a while that women and children were being disproportionately injured. Airbags were designed by men. They didn't have any women involved in designing the product. And you see that with AI now, machine learning. Early AI systems couldn't interpret what women were saying because the men were writing the algorithms. So unless you get women involved, you're going to get suboptimal outcomes. You're not going to get the level and quality of innovation that we could get if women were more involved.
And once again, I mean, we talked right at the beginning of this program about inclusion and about the values, the benefits of having an inclusive approach. The examples that you've just given there just reinforce that, you know, when it comes to women, half the population, to not include them has enormous detrimental effects.
Absolutely. The more women involved in technology, the better ideas you get, the better products and services you get, the better companies you get, and frankly, the world's a better place as a result.
One thing that stood out for me when reading your article for the World Economic Forum was the gender bias that exists in funding for startups and other technology companies. Could I get you to talk to that?
Yes, women aren't as successful at being able to attract external funding, despite the fact that the evidence shows that when women do start companies, they tend to be more successful than those started by men. So there's a problem, institutional problem. This, in part, is a reflection of the fact that venture capital funds and investment funds tend not to have very many women involved with them. But there is a systematic bias in the fact that most money goes to men.
There's quite a shocking statistic that if you're a male, you're 86% more likely to get venture capital investment than if you're a woman.
Correct. It's really worrying, isn't it? Especially given the statistics that show that women are more successful. If you take investment out of the formal system and look at things like crowdfunding, where it's done anonymously, women do far better because they don't have that institutional bias.
Some of us have been highlighting this problem for well on 10 years. And there has been quite a deal of political focus on this at various times. Why are we still in the situation where it doesn't seem to be getting better?
It's getting worse, and that's the terrifying thing. I think it is a systemic thing. It's a society-wide thing, and it begins at school. Girls don't have the role models. They're not encouraged to go into STEM careers. They don't see what technology can do. They see going into technology as being a geek life, one that's just involved with the technology, building it, writing code and so forth, rather than seeing what the outcomes, the benefits, the social benefits that can come from using technology. And I think once it becomes clearer that you can use technology for good, whether in companies or in government or in charities and NGOs and whatever, then girls will become more attracted to it. Girls want to make a difference with their working career, and that's what will motivate them to coming into technology careers. But there's a lot that can be done in organizations still. You need better mentoring programs, better career paths for women, better opportunities to work flexibly. These are old lessons, but we're still very poor at applying them. Organizations really are missing out on an enormous resource, a phenomenal resource, a part of society which is so full of creativity, so full of ability to be able to forge links, collaborative links, which are so important for innovation. We're just missing out on those now.
I don't want to be negative, but when you're talking about such an incredible imbalance, when you're talking about, I think the statistic you mentioned before was 5% of leadership positions in the technology industry are held by women. When you're talking about that size imbalance, there's a lot of work to be done, isn't there, to redress the issue? I mean, how are the technology companies themselves dealing with this, and how are universities and business schools?
Frankly, Silicon Valley, the companies, the technology companies in Silicon Valley have a very bad track record when it comes to gender issues. Women have had a very bad deal in Silicon Valley for a long time, and there's been a lot written about it, and there's been some very forceful voices, but progress has been very slow. I think what's happening in the university sector and in the business school sector is there's a much greater focus nowadays on encouraging entrepreneurship. The study, research into entrepreneurship and the teaching of entrepreneurship has really increased over recent years. And a lot of that entrepreneurship is focused on social issues, social entrepreneurship, which is very attractive to women, particularly who want to make that difference to the world. But you also see many more women coming through and teaching other women about entrepreneurs. There's numbers of schemes and programs which encourage women to share their lessons, to learn collectively about how to improve their entrepreneurial performance. So the business schools and the universities are beginning to get their act together, but it is a broader social problem that really does begin at school, works all the way through work, and needs a substantial and sustained effort to do something about it.
Well, Professor Mark Dodgson, thank you very much once again for highlighting the problem for us.
Thank you.
And Mark is the Director of the Technology and Innovation Management Centre at the University of Queensland. That's it for today and for the year, in fact. Next week, our summer season starts with highlights and some of our favourite programmes from the past 12 months. We'll be back in late January with an all-new season of Future Tense for 2018. Thanks to our hard-working sound engineers, Steve Fieldhouse and Dave White. Thanks also to Peter McMurray, who worked with us and retired earlier this year. And also to Julie Burley, who does our transcripts. And a personal thanks to my terrific, efficient and clever co-producer, Karin Savanovitz. I'm Anthony Fennell. Until next time, cheers.